the Aryan Silence course at the Buddhist Society Summer School, 1977. Opening talk given by Firoz Mehta on Friday evening, the 26th of August.
Well, first, just a word of greeting to all of us, including myself. We meet here as fellow students. Under no circumstances look upon me as a teacher. So then you put me at arm's length away from you. Or maybe two arm's length, according to your reaction to what I'm going to do with you. So, I hope we shall treat this week very, very seriously. Not solemnly with a long face, but very seriously, which means with our whole heart and soul, this so-called non-existent soul, which is such an unavoidable reality, and we shall devote all our energies towards living the religious life, living it not as merely as a routine, as something to which we must conform, but something which we must understand so fully that it is part and parcel of our very being. And the result is that we cannot help but live the religious life naturally, spontaneously, as a matter of course. It just happens to be our way of living every day. We don't have to live it like that. But we have grown into that condition. We have emerged, in other words, out of a subhuman condition into the fully human condition. Now this is a little bit of what is implied in the living of the religious life. This is our purpose. So we shall approach it in all seriousness and in all earnestness in that spirit. I do not want you to feel that you have to take whatever I try to put before you. It is for you to respond to it as best you can. And let that as best you can be also your natural wish, your natural urge. You find any reactions against it, regard those reactions as a heaven-sent opportunity to practice mindfulness. Samasati, the supreme key to the realization of the fulfillment of human destiny. Nirvana. Nibbana, the unshakable freedom of mind that the Buddha spoke of. A freedom so unshakable that the separation between body and mind, which is the plague and curse upon our human race, is no longer present. The fall of man represents that separation. When the mind and the body have really integrated and become one perfect whole, then you have the Uttara Purusha, the further man, as the Buddha said. Some people use the term Superman, but there's no need to talk of Superman. The term man includes all this. And that is what we have to realize. And we have to try and set an example of it in our daily lives. So, greetings to all in that spirit and with that purpose in view. Now, let me just state a few of the points which are in this timetable. The first one at 7:30 needs no explanation. 8:30, breakfast in mindful silence. Now we are going to practice silence above all. A definite practice. In silence throughout the day. 24 hours make one day. And silence for 24 hours. We shall all fail, of course. But there are certain failures which are not difficult to avoid. This silence, particularly at meal time, does not mean being unsociable. To be sociable means truly, deeply, to be fully awake, aware to the presence of those around us. That deep awareness is productive of true unity, true communion between oneself and those next to one. Ordinary chatter disrupts that communion. What the world calls sociability at the dinner table is precisely unsociability. Homo socialis, if one may so call him, is the man who is so sensitive to everyone around him that he has no feeling of separation from the other fellow. This is very important. You will see, therefore, that the ordinary courtesies will naturally be present. Don't glare at your neighbor and will him to pass you the salt. Just say very quietly, "Would you please let me have some salt or something like that?" And thank you. Please, and so forth, and patience with everybody. If you read some of the suttas like the Brahmayu Sutta, for instance, in the second volume of the Majjhima Nikaya, you will find that the Buddha's manners were absolutely unexceptionable. Nothing that we have ever achieved anywhere in the world, in Asia or Europe or America, surpasses those simple, perfect manners. Utter consideration for everybody. He who had that freedom which could make what appears an egoistic statement, "I see no one in the world who is like me." He was the perfected Holy One and he declared it quite simply, quite straightforwardly, without holding his head too high, without the look of pride or conceit about him. He said that, but his manners towards everybody were perfect manners.
And this is something from which we can learn a lot.
Not only that, but the first steps of his discipline, of the disciplines he laid down, were precisely those. The considerateness for everybody around, the good manners, the non-obtrusiveness of oneself upon the company. The quietness. Without having any false modesty or unnecessary diffidence. That is the picture of the Buddha which we have. And if we study the texts very carefully, we will see that it is a true picture. It is not a stylized picture. Not the product of the imagination of a super idealist. There are others. It is a statement of the simple facts of the situation. So, the silence on our part is part of the whole understanding and right expression of our communion with all around us. That is why the silence becomes so important. Only where necessary, the necessary word. The Buddha himself says that he always uses just the right words, the right simile, and he speaks very, very succinctly. He says that of himself. You find it in the Brahmajala Sutta, in the Digha Nikaya. You will also find it in one of the suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya. Those of you who are involved in the organizing and working of the summer school will necessarily have to speak, of course, with those who come to you for with questions or for some sort of help and so forth. So that, of course, is quite understood. And each and every one of you will naturally be greeted by your friends here, and one can just give a very short answer, very courteously, and say, as a member of the silence group, our discipline is complete silence. So they won't disturb you at the dinner table after that. If they do, just as they say, suffuse the four quarters of it, all the quarters of existence with metta and karuna and mudita and so forth. Suffuse all the four quarters, starting with your own brain and body, with silence. And you might find that that silence will spread like a benediction upon all around. But this is true. It's the silence that heals. It's the silence that creates. All the rest procreates merely. But it's the silence that creates the great mystery. Now, questions. During the day when you're studying, when you're meditating, or when we are having our meetings, you may find questions coming up in your mind. Jot them down in your notebook, you see. Consider them carefully. And if the question really is very urgent, really important, and it needs answering, then, as I say here, please write it down legibly. I'm an illiterate fellow, you know, I can't read unless it's very, very clearly written. And please sign your name. I won't give the game away. You see, I won't give you away. But please sign your name, also legibly, so I know who is asking the question. It makes a great difference, you see. One answers different people in different ways and adapts the answer as far as possible to the whole group also. The questions, I will try to tackle the questions during the afternoon meeting. Sometimes several people may have questions which are very, very similar, you see. And I'll treat the whole lot as a related single topic and try to deal with them naturally. All right? Agreeable?
First, may I ask you when you want us to give you the questions, because obviously you have to have time to look at them before the afternoon.
After the morning meeting. You see, after the morning meeting, between the morning meeting and lunchtime. You see? But the... I might treat the question the next day. You see? Now, as regards your notebooks, this is a suggestion. You may have your own efficient technique for using your notebook. This is just a suggestion, as I say. Make your notes during the meetings or when you're studying by yourself or meditating by yourself or walking out or whatever it is. Make your notes on the left-hand side. Jot them down on the left-hand side. You see? Brief notes. Say, we meet at 9:15 in the morning. And 9:30, I shall perhaps give a talk, or whatever it is. I shall speak as slowly as possible. So that you can... jot down points which are of interest to you, which mean something to you. See? Then, out of those notes, questions may arise, but the questions must be briefly written out. Don't write short speeches, that's no use. You see, that if you write a short speech like that, it means that the mind is in a confused state and you don't know what you're talking about. So, just a precise question, precisely formulated, can be handed over. Later on, as the days pass here, and when you have gone back home, you may find some quite valuable insights emerging. So, the right-hand side pages will be found very useful for putting those down. That way, you will be able to study in the real sense of the word. Another point in connection with study. Whatever you study, and I trust you have brought your own particular texts which you like, whatever they are, religious texts, whenever you study, take any little bit, read it very slowly through a paragraph, read it again, let the mind dwell quietly upon it, and savor its essence, get its essence, understand it,
with your own mind poised, not agreeing and say, oh, I like that, that's good, that's fine, I agree with that. Oh, I don't agree with that, I find it distasteful or something. That's the wrong way to start. Just let the mind be perfectly poised. Remember the Buddha's own words, which he says often, I neither concur with the world, nor do I dispute with the world. The enlightened one said that. And it does not please him or displease him because he concurs, because he neither concurs nor disputes. You see, the tremendous poise involved in that. Extraordinary poise. A poise which enables the whole being to be in harmony with the inner truth of the situation. And this is how the enlightened one functions inwardly. It's a wonderful lesson for us. Well, I mustn't say too much now. I can go on. Now, if you miss taking down something because, say, I have gone on talking, perhaps some of you may be expert shorthand writers, and I hope that those who can write shorthand will be willing to help those who cannot write shorthand and fill the gaps in those who haven't got the notes down fully. So we can all help each other in that way. Don't come and ask me afterwards, what did you say for last Tuesday about this, that and the other? I don't say anything, it just gets said and it's gone. Gone with the wind. So there. Now, any of you do yoga?
Very little.
Is there anybody who's a trained yoga teacher here?
No.
Well, I must leave it to you then, those who have already been trained, you just carry on with your own yoga practice, if you feel like it, at 5 o'clock. The 5 o'clock is suggested because you will see above it 4:30, from 4:30 till dinner time at 7 o'clock. You see, you have a period to yourselves. And this, which is suggested at 4:30, is of very great importance. And note the difference between the two. Learn to be alone, not lonely. To be alone does not mean cutting oneself adrift from the entire situation around one, whether it be the circumstance, the nature, other people, it doesn't mean that at all. But to be alone fundamentally means to be undemanding, no possessiveness. No expectations or hope or imposing anything upon the environment. We all impose upon the environment all the time.
One of the great things the Buddha said after the night of the enlightenment, when he was meditating all those days, that he who is free from imposing the self upon the world, he is fit to speak the Brahma word, the Brahma Vada, the holy word, the word of truth. The word which is the prophetic word, prophetic speech, the one which liberates without imposing. So, we learn to be alone. The aloneness which implies the complete and perfect relationship with everyone and everything around us. And you will find that innumerable sorrows, regrets, remorses, vain longings, futile hopes, and all those things which, oh, just lacerate the heart of man throughout the world, will vanish like morning mists before the sun. Because you'll be free from grasping it. Therefore you will find that in that aloneness is the totality present, the wholeness. That's why, learn to be alone. Then you won't be lonely. If one has the sense of loneliness, one is thinking of the separate self. There is self-pity and all the folly and misery associated with that, and the innumerable mistakes in conduct associated with that loneliness. How can one live the holy life, the brahmacharya, if one is like that? So, be alone, wide awake, yourself, a true man, whether you be possessed of a male body or a female body, but a true man. In that way, one is living Buddhism. And now, this reviewing the day is a very valuable practice. When you go to bed, you'll probably fall asleep before you have done even a fraction of the review of the day. Excellent. Don't worry about that. You will probably find that reviewing the day backwards from now, the previous 5 minutes, half hour previous to that, what was happening, what was your state of mind above all? See, and try and go as far back as is comfortably possible. Don't force yourself. If you find yourself dropping off to sleep, sleep. Sleep happily. Sleep without the prick of conscience. All the disturbance of anxiety. All anxiety and fear are self-centered. So, review the day. Don't pat yourself on the back for something which you think was good, or quarrel with yourself because you think something which happened or was thought or your state of mind was bad. See, virtues bind and enslave just as much as vices do. Because they confine you to the sphere of ambivalence. The good, evil, kind, cruel, success, failure, conflict.
But this is precisely what the Buddha taught us, to release ourselves out of into the wholeness, which is nirvana. So there'll be no prizes, no punishments. Inflicted by yourself upon yourself, or given by yourself to yourself. That's just a suggestion. And as I have put here, review mindfully with equanimity and clarity. And sleep soundly and happily. Now, I will be suggesting meditation subjects each morning. I may say a few words of explanation with regard to those subjects. But on the blackboard, Ian Shipman has very kindly consented to write out for me. I have written it all out for him. See, on the blackboard, certain things. He will be writing for... Where is Ian? He will be writing out for you tonight something on the blackboard, you see. And either tonight, if you like, or early tomorrow morning, please copy it out first in your notebook, you see. And leave a little extra space, because I'll suggest three types of subjects. You see? Three types of subjects for meditation for the day. Alright? Is that all quite clear?
Rose, where should we do yoga? How's going to ask?
5 o'clock.
Where?
Oh, where? Well, there are only three or four of you. You can do it here. You see? This room will be our room, so to say, you see.
I take it that each group is exclusive throughout the whole of the week.
Yes.
And one must not stray into another group.
Yes, that would really be practical and wise.
Not
to stray into other rooms and other groups, you see.
Yes.
And one other thing, please. Punctuality. Punctuality is really essential. One notices certain people, and I'm afraid this applies more to ladies than to gentlemen, they have a tendency to walk in late. And they are fairly consistent in their behavior, walking in late. This walking in late, keeping others waiting, or disturbing the meeting once it has started, is nothing but an expression of out-and-out egoism and vanity. You know, the Buddha never kept anybody waiting. You study the text carefully, you'll find he never kept anybody waiting. But if in the meeting hall, when he approached the meeting hall after his own meditations or anything, and he heard voices inside, he waited till there was a suitable lull in the chatter inside, and then he coughed gently and tapped with his finger upon the door. And when the door was opened, then he entered, greeted them, exchanged the courtesies and compliments of politeness, as it is put in the texts. And then he inquired, what was it that you were conversing about? See? So, punctuality is essential. Meal times, meeting times, and so on. Come as early as you like.
5 minutes, half an hour early, but not half a second late. Really important. Try and picture for yourselves what could happen to the world if Mother Earth dropped half a second a day. She has already spun round Father Sun for 5,000 million years. Half a second a day. You work that out and see the difference. Of course, one has to study the subject. See the difference it would make to climate, to conditions, and everything. The enormous effect on it. It could be a devastating effect.